All right, welcome to Old Town New World. We're here at Millstone Pizza in Old Town Rock Hill, South Carolina. And I'm here without Chris Gervais, and my name is Jason Broadwater, and we're here to talk about the ever-changing world of Old Town, Small Town, USA.
No, okay.
We have a guest with us by the name of Josiah Blevins. Say hello, Josiah.
Hello, Josiah.
Very well done. Well played. You've been listening to our podcast, right? You're one of the three people. That's awesome. That's great. I hear y'all all get together and listen to it together.
I actually refuse to listen to it with anyone else. I listen to it in a dark room, sitting in a recliner.
Okay, perfect. We'll stop you there.
All right.
We also have with us Silent Anil. We also have with thank you, Anil, for that. We also have behind the mic Magic Micah. And we have Mr. David. David, please say something.
Hi.
All right. So, Anil, Micah, David, myself, and now newly Josiah are all part of Revenflow. So, Josiah, we're going to talk today to you about kind of how you ended up in Rock Hill and how you ended up at Revenflow and why you choose Rock Hill over other places, because hopefully you, like me, believe you could choose to be anywhere if you could. So let's start with, first of all, how did you end up in Rock Hill?
I ended up down here basically on the strength of Winthrop's art program. I was studying art at another state school in the region, very nearby, who I will not name, and I saw some of the work coming out of their art department, and I knew that I had to transfer. So,
because it just was lackluster, or you just didn't, or what?
There was just like such a difference in the level of like craft and skill that was coming out of the Winthrop department.
Wow.
And so then, eventually, I did transfer to Winthrop University. Went there for 4 years. Graduated in 2013 with a Bachelor of Fine Arts.
Hey, that's fantastic, man. It's great to hear that the craft and skill coming out of Winthrop is good and head and shoulders above some of the other programs around here. I mean, Winthrop is a art school, and we can't lose sight of that. You know, when we talk about potentially getting a football team, you know, we can't lose sight of the fact that it's an art school.
Right. I mean, a lot of people go there for the theater program, the education programs. It's not a place with a lot of the, I don't know, the more, you know, business majors. There is an awesome poli sci department, but you know,
right.
there's not engineers. There's a lot of the very heartfelt professions that have really strong programs at Winthrop.
Absolutely, you know, and it's funny. 80%. I learned this the other day. Sorry, I just cranked my Harley. Hold on, let me finish. Cranking my Harley. All right, I'm done. I just learned this the other day. Actually, dang, I wish I had a Harley for real. That would be sweet. I would definitely ride it on the show. Anyway, I learned the other day that 80% of college graduates, regardless of their major, end up in business one way or the other. But that doesn't mean that 80% of college majors should be in business, because it's the different skill sets that people explore in different majors, different knowledge, different experience, that they all come together somehow in the private sector and do great things.
Right. Actually, in the interim, after I went to the first university that I attended, I ended up dropping out of there and working at a magazine for a while. So it was a magazine publisher. They published a bunch of magazines. And so I was...
Were you naked in these magazines?
I was not naked in these magazines.
Good.
They couldn't pay me enough. But yeah, you know, I had like real world experience, and then I went back to college. So I was getting emails from the non-traditional student department and all that.
Right,
I was an adult student. I worked for about 5 years at this magazine publisher, and studying fine art, you know, I knew there's not a place where you can be a fine artist and get a paycheck, really. Like most artists work for themselves.
Right.
So, you know, that's what I was really interested in. But, you know, I kind of knew that I would end up going somewhere else to pay the bills.
Yeah.
And I found somewhere really, really awesome that I feel like feel like really lines up with myself and a lot of my like personal preferences and beliefs. So I'm really happy to be here.
That's great, man. That's good to hear. You know, so you came to Rock Hill not for the town. You came for the art department at the university. And then as you got engaged in that, you know, obviously you were impressed with that art department. When did you start engaging with the town itself?
I met a bunch of students from Rock Hill when I was attending another university. The Winthrop students would come and hang out with us. And I guess the first time I really engaged with Rock Hill, I came down to visit because we had made all these friends who went to Winthrop, and they told us that there was going to be a dance party. And so I drive down here with some friends.
Wait. Is this a boy-girl party?
This was kind of a boy-boy, girl-girl, boy-girl party. Yeah. So I go to this party. It's in this really ornate old building, which I am looking over my shoulder at right now. I walk in. It's this huge decommissioned courtroom. There's a giant graphic of the Obey Giant logo with a judge's wig on it, and Shepard Fairey is DJing in what is now the courtroom in
this?
The Getty Center. That was in 2006.
Really?
Yeah, he has some
is
ties.
Is that before he got so big with the Obama
No, he was already huge. Became international. He became much more known after the Obama thing in 2008. But he was already nationally famous, and he has some ties to the graphic design department at Winthrop.
Also,
and
his uncle was running the White Home Museum.
I think, that might have been what it was. But he came and gave the convocation speech or the graduation speech. I don't know what speech he gave, but the graduating graphic designers, he gave a speech to them and then proceeded to DJ their after party.
That rules, so, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's kind of my first impression of Rock Hill, you know, is just this place
impression.
Where, and everyone acted really nonchalant about it, so I kind of figured this kind of thing happened just all the time.
But it didn't after that. And you were stuck here. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. Wow, that's a great story.
Well, no, I mean, last night, this legendary punk band called Ghost Mice played at my friend's house, which is a stone's throw away from the Winthrop campus. So there really is cool stuff happening all the time if you know where to look.
Amen.
You gotta turn over some rocks, but
yeah, amen. Turn over some Rock Hills.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, maybe
not get dignified by that.
Yeah. Sorry. I would like to formally apologize for that joke. That was Josiah's fault. So anyway, actually Anil said that. Anil, would you be quiet? I'm trying to podcast.
Man, I know. I've been talking too much over here.
Golly. So as you went through Winthrop as a student, were the students coming down? Were the students coming down here? I say down here. This is downtown, and it's like only a mile and a half from campus, but it's disconnected because there's the hollowed out textile corridor in between, you know, the downtown and campus. So were they coming down here to hang out much? Or?
Well, I mean, in the art department, you have a lot of real explorer types, so, and everyone rides bikes. That was like a really strong trend, and so everyone would ride bikes around Rock Hill. Everyone was really interested in the old buildings, the old architecture, the history of the town, probably more so than maybe people in other disciplines. We would come downtown, we would, you know, ride our bikes around. You know, there's a lot of like really interesting old storefronts. After I've seen them for the millionth time, you know, you kind of forget. But seeing them at the beginning, I was just, you know, I just really thought that the area was really beautiful and kind of whimsical. The whole place really captivated me. And I still really enjoy just kind of riding around the zone, like the rings around downtown. You find a lot of really interesting stuff, a lot of really old stuff that you don't find. I mean, even in Charlotte, they just knock down like everything.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah.
You know, it's funny. The new economy is so based on the creative skill sets and technology, iterations of technology, is so based on kind of a creative process, you know, iterative process, which we learn from the creative arts. You know, I know when I was working in writing my novel and book of poetry and all that stuff, it's like, you know, you do it and do it again and then do it again and then do it again and then do it, you know, it's iterative in nature, and that's so natural for the artist. And it's been such a struggle for kind of the business folks who are trained that, like, there's one solution. You kind of do the prep work, make the plan, execute, and deliver. To introduce iterative process into that, you know, is a difficult thing. So the new economy is so wrapped up in the creative element, but it's also so wrapped up in the kind of rebirth of old spaces and buildings. And it's fascinating to me when I talk to people that go through arts-based disciplines, how much ahead of the curve most of them are on having their head around the rebirth of old spaces for new uses, and how that's driving the economy. I mean, you know, I didn't end that with a question, so I'm just gonna stop talking and let you talk back at me.
Yeah, I know you talk about, like, the punk rock economy a lot, and DIY, and repurposing, like, the space that you live in, I think, is one of the coolest things you can do. Just transforming kind of, you know, the architecture and everything that was, like, this really, like, formal, rigid space into, you know, now we have Springs Creative across the street. They've done some really cool things. I mean, Rev and Flow is located in an old building. I don't know what it was before.
It's been several things. It was part of a actually, Millstone was a laundry at one time. And in the 60s or something, I think, church bought a bunch of these buildings and used them for church purposes. And I think they, who knows what they did there. And but originally, I think it might have been a store, a retail store, back in, like, the day of the Main Street, where people came down and shopped on Main Street for their underwear and socks, you know, kind of stuff. But anyway, continue.
The house that I live in is about 100 years old. It's been split up into apartments. It's this giant old house. You know, it's been turned into a bunch of apartments. And, you know, I could not really afford to remodel that house or live in it by myself. But, you know, sharing it with a bunch of people, and, you know, my roommate is really good at a lot of design and interior decorating stuff. She's, like, really, really, like, tricked out our house to, nice. You know, all the old things are just, like, really charming and seem new. They seem really fitting. It's really comfortable. So
it's funny, man. It's like it's about perspective.
Yeah.
You know, it's just putting it's a new way to look at something, not tearing it down and building something new. It's not about a fabrication. It's about perspective, you know?
Yeah. I should add that house is right outside of Old Town, so that's why that was pertinent.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Well, and it's old, and, I mean, and everything. I think, and a shared space. Really, there's a lot about your living situation that is almost poster childish about the millennial generation and the new economy, the creative economy, all that stuff. Shared space, repurposing old stuff, and having a new perspective on it. Not feeling like, oh, I'm in this ratty old place. I need to tear it down and build something new when I get the money to, you know what I mean? I need a 1980s Ferrari and a fur coat, you know? So.
No, I need a 2016 Ferrari and a faux fur coat.
Yeah, there you go.
Cruelty-free, baby.
12 cylinders and cruelty-free. Josiah Blevins.
Oh, God, don't put that on my tombstone.
We're not going to put it on the tombstone, but we will put it on the website.
Yeah, right.
Because I can control that. So.
Because the website's permanent. Josiah, one time you said to me, and I hadn't known you that long, what's been a couple weeks, month, 2 months, month?
3 hours.
We're getting desperate for a guest on the podcast. We just picked him up on the way. He was out in the outer rings of Old Town, in his old house on an old bike.
Yeah.
So you said to me maybe a week ago, 2 weeks ago, you said, you know, that you have a lot of friends in Charlotte who are like, dude, when are you going to move back to Charlotte, or when are you going to come up here or whatever? And you said to them, like, I'm not going anywhere. Like, I've chosen to be here, and I'm going to stay here. So, you know, talk to me about some of the whys behind that, just so we can understand your perspective.
Yeah. Well, I hope this doesn't sound pejorative to the town at all, but growing up, one of my favorite movies was this movie, it may have been produced by like a Christian television network. It's called The Buttercream Gang. It's about these kids who lived in a really small town, and they were, had like a really close relationship. It was like four best friends, and one of them moved to Chicago and got into a gang. You know, it's very like outsiders type of riff. But you know, I just idealized that so much, like this town that I could just ride my bike around. And eventually, as I got older, I learned more about kind of like big cities. I visited New York a couple times, and I moved to Charlotte from a small town in North Carolina. And it just kind of was really frustrating. I didn't feel close to a lot of people. It's pretty impossible to ride your bicycle in Charlotte.
Right, yeah.
Which, you know, is not, you know, the end all be all for me personally, but it is kind of indicative of like how hard it is to get around a geographical area. So Rock Hill, I mean, I could walk, I can walk from my house to Revenflow in about 8 minutes. Like, and that's just a huge quality of life thing for me.
Yeah,
it's
that's
just
great.
Like, you can, there's pretty much everything I need. I mean, my yoga studio is right behind Revenflow. Yeah, I share a painting studio with another guy that's across the street from that. And I mean, whenever I do need something from Charlotte, it's right down the road. It's you know, you kind of have the best of both worlds. You know, rent has not gone up. Every place I lived in Charlotte, rent would just go up every year. And you could see these people, you know, they just had dollar signs in their eyes because new condos were going up next door. These arts and crafts houses that they were renting, you know, they were just, you know, just raising rent on, you know, people, you know, I was working at like a Chinese food place.
Yeah.
I wasn't raking in the dough, so yeah.
But you were raking in the wontons?
I was rolling in the wontons, yeah.
Pun intended. Poor, awful pun intended.
Yeah, but I do think that geographical area, the close distance between where I live with a bunch of my friends in Rock Hill, just has a huge difference. We get together for dinner, you know, I walk over to a friend's house and, you know, we can have a beer. You know, people are having house shows, having people come and play music in their homes, and it's, you know, it's within walking distance. And that just has like a huge psychological impact on like the willingness of people to come together and like spend time together.
Absolutely. It's like the car is almost like a fence, you know? It's a barrier. And you see it with the university, you know, if the kids can get downtown without a car, it changes their relationship with their city immensely. You know, that's something we're working on. We just actually re-engaged the consulting firm that did the trolley car, streetcar study. And they're going to redo the numbers in it, like in terms of how much everything will cost and everything. And we're trying to get the master developers that are coming in to redevelop the whole Knowledge Park area between Winthrop and downtown. You know, they're looking at including in all their plans this streetcar, because the idea is not, it's, first of all, you put down those rails and people develop alongside them. So it's an economic development, commercial real estate thing. But it's also just about connectivity. You know, everything's about connectivity. You describe a neighborhood, a world where you're connected to everything, connected to your work, your friends, you know, your recreational activities, without the barrier of the car, you know. It has a big impact on things.
Yeah, and the university
is the also universe, yeah.
The university is kind of an organizing institution too, in that it ropes in a lot of people who do study these creative disciplines at Winthrop that we talked about, and then end up settling right around here. So the per capita number of people who are musicians, artists, dancers, is just much higher than what you would find if you just took a random sample. I think a lot of people don't realize that.
So it's a cultural vibrancy. You know, I talk about, when I travel around and speak about kind of developing for the new economy, developing your city for the new economy, the cultural component cannot be overstated. I mean, you know, you got to have this kind of cultural vibrancy for people to be a part of, and it can happen in small places. It doesn't have to, all the culture doesn't get sucked up by New York, you know. It can happen in Rock Hill as well as it can happen anywhere else, and a university is usually the way to drive that because it brings people in for those reasons. But so you've done a bit of traveling outside of this country. Can you talk to us about some of your experiences in doing that?
I went and lived for about 7 months in Finland in a really small town that was basically the equivalent of Rock Hill, South Carolina. In a really cosmically funny way, the region that we were in is called South Karelia.
Wow.
Which is like, yeah, it's almost exactly the same. The town that I was living in, like I said, it was really small. We did ride bikes everywhere that we went, and there was a larger town nearby that this town was kind of a satellite of. So it was really like a strong parallel between Rock Hill and this town. And so I found that a lot of the local services there were just really, really strong. There was a hostel across from the school that I was attending, and there's a guy who just like put out crackers and coffee there and ran the desk, and that was like his profession. Wow. Like he ran that place, and I think because of the socialist institutions over there, you know, like people who work at grocery stores, that's their job. Right. They're not trying to get out. They're not trying to climb the ladder. And you know, they're probably not happy. That's not. They're probably happy.
Right. I know what you mean. That's not incredibly fulfilling.
That's not their dream job.
Right.
Right. But you know, that provides for them. It lets them do what they want to do in the rest of their time, which is not the experience that I've had here personally. Working at a lot of like poorer paying jobs. You know, it's pretty much not up to you what you're going to do in your free time because your income is eaten up really quickly. But I was really surprised by their parks were just like really well appointed. They were basically like free cabins that were open to anyone to just like walk into and sleep the night in. And they were like really nicely cared for. Whereas, you know, here you expect to see like a bunch of graffiti everywhere and like broken
and
windows.
Worse. Much worse that I won't even say out loud.
Yeah. The sense of responsibility that everyone had there was, you know, really palpable. No one littered. It was just, you know, people, you know, if someone saw someone defacing public property, they would, you know, would engage them, you know, they probably wouldn't fight them because they don't do that type of thing. And even the police, we did have a very loud party, Rock Hill style, and the police came, and they were so nice, and they, you know, they said like you got to quiet it down or you're gonna get a ticket, which you know happens here too, but they, you know, it was just a really like. It's a really different culture, a really different feeling about who's responsible for the care of things that are part of the public domain. And like I said, the police relationship with the public was like really different.
You know, that's interesting, man. I think that there's a responsibility among the millennial generation that was lacking in the Gen X. And I'm a Gen Xer and by a lot of sense, and I'm a millennial by some sense. But, you know, I think that just the spoiled brat aspect of the Gen Xers, and I say that as a Gen Xer, where it's just everything's disposable. You know, you just...
There's a lot of nihilism.
Throw it away and buy another one, man. And just, who cares? Like, it's not my responsibility. And it's... And then you take the traditionalists, like, older than the baby boomer, like my wife's grandfather who fought in World War II, like that. The sense of responsibility that he has in his community, I'm seeing that in the millennial generation. And yet, I hadn't seen that in the boomers or the Gen Xers. And you got boomers saying that Gen Xers are like, you know, I mean, saying millennials are like worthless and they're lazy and all this stuff. And they're missing the idea that, like, I haven't seen in studying this and looking at it and everything and knowing a bunch of people, the set of social responsibilities that you see in millennials are like the traditionalist generation, like the World War II generation. It's incredible.
My friend Matt and I have talked about this at some length, and the theory that we kind of have is that social media plays a huge part in this, because people tell their own stories, you see people's lives playing out in like great detail, and it's a lot of people from like different walks of life. So, you know, like someone who is a Muslim, someone, you know, who's a person of color, you know, you don't have to kind of wonder what their life is like anymore to some degree.
Or even back the curtain a little bit.
Right. Even, you know, even like the relationships between the genders, I think, you know, are starting to get better, as I think a lot of people from this generation identify as feminists and are, you know, aware of like gender inequality and the problems with a lot of the, you know, institutionalized racism and homophobia that have been part of our society for a long time.
Yeah.
Because they see how it hurts people. Yeah. They see the pain firsthand.
The personal side.
Right. Yeah. They see it affecting someone firsthand.
Yeah.
And you know, if that's because of Facebook or Twitter, you know, then that's awesome.
Yeah. No, it's interesting, man. Anytime you take a situation where you can generalize and you can stereotype or whatever, but when you one-on-one sit down with an individual and actually find compassion for that individual, it changes everything.
Yeah.
So if it's increasing compassion, then good for
right. You. Yeah, as it increases the connections, it makes it so much harder to turn a blind eye or to just dismiss that person based on like a preconceived set of notions. So.
Well, let me stop you before you philosophize all over the place here.
Sorry to be classing up the joint here.
Yeah, I know, exactly. This is weird. We're usually making fart jokes at this point in the podcast. And let me thank you for being on the podcast. And let me thank you for being a part of Rev and Flow.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Good. And Rock Hill's happy to have you. I say that because I have the authority to speak on behalf of this entire city and everyone in it for some reason.
And I'd like to go ahead and take this opportunity to announce Jason's candidacy for mayor.
I'm not voting for me. I'm not. I advise you don't vote
That's
for
because
me.
Because Jason refuses to vote.
Right, yeah. Exactly. I'm not even registered. No, I'm just kidding. So anyway, I do thank you for being here. And as always, I thank Anil for your valuable contribution.
Absolutely.
No problem. And I would thank Micah for his loudness. And David, I thank you for something you said about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, that one thing.
You did good. You did good.
Thanks.
All right.
Give a big shout out to Millstone for the soundtrack.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, this is my mixtape that I'm playing on my Jambox.
Dude, it's fire. I just have to tell you, it's fire.
Thank you. All right. Well, I guess we'll see you next week on Old Town New World.